Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. What happens when you realize you can paint at the age of 57, and then you realize you're also AUDHD, and then you adopt three kids, and then one of them you realize is autistic, and then you have a funny feeling that the other two as well? Well, that happened with my next guest. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and let's learn more about her. And I'll see you on the other side. See you there.
I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. I wanna believe in the truth, but only see what I'm shown. Got the freedom to choose, but can't decide on my own. Follow what the group is thinking, bottle up my intuition till it's popping out the box that I don't fit in. Shape shifting, same player, different position. The definition.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studio. Today I'm joined with Andrea Claire. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Thank you very much, Reed. Nice to be here.
You're welcome. So why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so I live in Scotland in the UK. I am an artist. In fact, I'm called the menopause artist. I help women understand and navigate their menopause journey through art. And I only discovered 2 years ago that I'm good at art at 57. And about the same time, I also discovered that I have ADHD, so I'm neurodiverse. And potentially I'm on the autism spectrum as well. So I'm a mum of three, and my children, one is diagnosed with autism and ADHD, and I suspect the other two are also neurodiverse. And I have
Nice.
three dogs as well.
Okay. Now, what
So,
made you realize you can paint at age 57?
I sort of doodled on and off throughout my life. I wasn't actually allowed pursue art at school. My dad was wanting me to focus on academic subjects, but my mum fortunately taught me lots of creative pursuits when I was young. And then, as I say, I've doodled on and off throughout life, but never really recognised that as a talent or as a specific hobby. And then, towards the end of lockdown, someone was doing a live workshop painting a flower using watercolors. And I'd never used watercolors before, but I knew that I'd inherited a wee set from my mum. So I thought, oh, I'll do this. I'll try this out. And my flower turned out okay. So I thought, I think I might try and paint a dog because I'd pencil sketched my dogs in the past from photographs, but never really thought that that was proper art. And then I painted this dog, and I thought, oh, it looks okay, and I really enjoyed using watercolors. And then I noticed that somebody on a Facebook group that I'm a member of, somebody locally, they were looking for a photographer to photograph their very ill dog. And I thought I need to paint that dog. So I painted it and I gifted the portrait to the lady, and she was absolutely delighted. And we've stayed friends. And I then put another post on the group and said, would anybody else be interested in having a pet painted? And I must have painted over 100 pets now. So, yeah, that's really how I discovered my talent. And since then, as I say, I've painted lots of pets in watercolor, and I've also started to seriously paint using acrylics. So,
Now,
yeah.
what made you feel that you were on the both spectrums?
On the spectrum. So, As I say, my daughter was, she was diagnosed with autism and ADHD when she was 14. She's now 19. So I had a good awareness of those things following her diagnosis. And then a friend of mine said to me that she thought she had ADHD. So I started doing a bit more research because we do get on so well together. We're very similar. And I thought, I wonder if I've, I've got ADHD. And then there was somebody offering a free training online. So I followed that training and it was about ADHD. It was by somebody in America who's got ADHD. And yeah, it all kind of slotted into place. And I thought that's why I've had the challenges that I've had.
Now, isn't it ironic that almost all adults nowadays tend to look back at their children who are autistic and realize, wait a minute, that's a complete mirror of myself.
Yes, because it is hereditary, although it can skip a generation, I believe. But the ironic thing for me is that my children are adopted, so they're not my, they're not birth children. But my eldest son, I believe, has ADHD, and we, when I first met the children, I really connected with him straight away. So, yeah, it's really interesting that, I'm neurodiverse and I've got three children, non-biological children who are neurodiverse.
Now, when you realized you had autism and ADHD, did your past start to make sense to you at
Oh,
all?
for sure. For sure. And I talk about it in my in the chapter of the book that I've co-authored. Because it all kind of slotted into place because I was a very shy child, and that was partly due to my upbringing by quite Victorian parents. I always struggled socially and trying to be part of friendship groups. I found it easier if I was on a one-to-one basis with a friend, but if I was in a group of friends, it was difficult. Although I was actually very good at sports, so I was on the netball team, and in that environment, it was fine. I didn't feel awkward, but being friends with people and just I was very sensitive as well. So yeah, that and it all kind of slots into place. And then equally, when I was in the corporate world, I had a very responsible role and I did a lot of project management, but I did project management my way, a way that worked for me. And I didn't follow, the different methodologies that you're meant to use. And now I know why. Because my brain works differently, and that's okay.
Now, would you say that art has become like your special interest because you're so good at it? Would you say you almost hyper focus when you're doing your artwork?
Yes, I mean, I love art and I love the escape that it gives you. And the fact that you can just completely zone out from all the busyness of the day. And yes, I can hyper focus. I can hyper focus on other things as well. I used to do a lot of course creation when I was in the corporate world, and I found myself now looking back, I used to be very hyper focused on that because it was a creative outlet for me. So yeah, I know all about hyper focus, but I also know the reverse of that. When I'm not interested in something, I really struggle to focus.
All right. Now, do you have any sensory issues, and do your children have any sensory issues?
Do I have sense? I don't. I know that I've never been good with itchy wool jumpers. But do I have sent? I don't think I do. My children do, though, for sure. My daughter does. She is, she struggles with certain materials and labels in clothes. And in fact, I suppose I had that as well. But I've never thought, oh, that is a sensory issue. It was just me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of people think, a lot of people who real don't realize they have autism until certain things start adding up. Tags starting to feel, clothing with tags begins to irritate them more.
Yes.
Sounds begin to be more irritating. And
Yes.
then they realize, wait a minute, something's not right here. And then that's when they decide to go get tested. And it turns out, yeah, you have autism.
Yeah, there were lots of things that my daughter did growing up, which thought were a result of what had happened to her before she came to live with us. So autism was never, or neurodivergence was never a consideration. But now that I'm aware that she has autism and ADHD, again, it all slots into place, you know, all the ticks and the masking. So yeah. And I think now society as a whole is becoming more aware of neurodivergent slowly. But so, you know, when it was never on my radar when I was younger. I don't know that it even existed as a thing when I was younger, you know?
Well, it's the same thing here, actually. When my mom first was told by family who were psychologists or psychiatrists, even our doctor, our family doctor, all said I had autism, high functioning. And at that time, autism wasn't the thing. Not even in the state's eye, it wasn't even listed as a
No.
disability. But as time went on, it became a norm, and then it was added into the list of disabilities.
Yeah. And there's so many more people out there who are neurodiverse but don't realize that they are. So it's not going to be as unusual as it has been. I mean, I have no issue with it. I view it as my superpower. I love the fact that I'm different. And would my life have been different had I known it when I was younger? Potentially. But then maybe I wouldn't have just got on with things the way I have. I don't know. It's a hard one.
Now, I'm going to hit you with a hard question.
Okay.
What is it like raising children, both on the spec, both with both you being on the spectrum and them being on the spectrum? It's got to be difficult, complicated, and a joy all together.
Yes, so when the children were younger, because I'm very enthusiastic and very just go for it. I've got a go for it type attitude. And my eldest son is like that. And I now know that that is why we got on so well when he was younger. However, dealing with my daughter when I didn't know, that was very, very difficult. And now that I've had 5 years of being with her and understanding, there's still frustrations, especially when, you know, the lack of flexibility. And I found that as she's got older and she's become more independent, certain traits have become more pronounced. Can be frustrating. And then my youngest son, he's very rigid in his things that he likes to do and the way that he does them. So that can be frustrating, especially if you're in a rush to get out the door, but now he's got to go through his sequence of things and, take his time with them. So yeah, I suppose it has been kind of difficult. But I had added to that the added complication of them being adopted and dealing with struggles as a result of what had happened before to them. So I suppose I was more focused on that than I was on anything else. I thought everything that any behavior that was challenging was as a result of that, rather than now I know it was neurodivergence.
All right. Now, when did you realize that one of your adopted kids was AUDHD?
So my daughter was supported by it's called in the UK, it's called the Children and Adolescent Mental Health Service. So she was supported during primary school with that up to age 11, but there was never any talk of autism or ADHD. But she was getting bullied at school, so we were looking at strategies to help her with that. And then she had a good final year at primary school, went to high school, and wasn't getting any support at that point. And then the bullying started again. And thankfully, her guidance teacher said, I think we need to get her referred again to the same service as previously. And we had our first meeting with the clinical psychologist, and she was chatting to my daughter, chatting to me, getting to know us. And as we were leaving the room, she said to me, I think we're going to investigate autism and ADHD. And it was just like a bolt out of the blue, because my only knowledge of autism or even ADHD was sort of naughty boys, who misbehaving. So of course I went home and Googled it, as you do. And as soon as I read through all of the characteristics, I thought, that is my daughter. And it was just like, wow, it all made sense. But then we had to go through the formal diagnosis process, which was, time consuming. And I had to, they came to the conclusion, I think from memory, that she was autistic, but they were disputing whether she had ADHD. And just the report that had been written wasn't accurate. So they reviewed it based on my awareness of her behavior. So yeah, and it was good. I had no regrets that she has neurodivergence. I know she has her challenges, and there's times when she says, oh, Mum, I wish I was just like, normal people, whatever normal is. But the fact that she now understands why she is the way she is and why she has the challenges that she does. But, she's a great girl. She's very confident and friendly, and she's actually got a lot of those traits from me, which is nice.
All right. Now, what made you, no. Yeah, what made you realize you wanted to share your story with the world?
So I've always felt that I had a book to write, and I've always wanted to help other people in some way. I've never really known how. And then when the opportunity came to be part of the book that I've co-authored, it was like a great, it was a release to be able to tell that story, because I knew that other people would be able to relate to it, and it would also inspire them. And I mean, I talk about characteristics and challenges that I've had, and I suspect people will hear the story and think, well, actually, Maybe I've got ADHD. Maybe that's why I have the challenges that I do.
All right. What was it like sharing your story with the world?
Well, I actually read it in front of a group of businesswomen the day that the book was launched. And I suppose because I've done a lot of standing in front of audiences in the past, because I was an IT trainer for 20 years, I felt quite confident about getting up and sharing it, but it was still quite nerve-wracking and emotional. But no, I was okay with sharing my story. I didn't have any issue with doing that because I knew that it was a story that had to be told.
I mean, as it is with everybody on the spectrum, it's our story needs to be told because people only get to see one side of our lives. They don't get to see the other. I actually had just written a book, and it's in edits now, and it's one of the most important messages people need to listen to, which is you need to step outside of your comfort zone. Otherwise, the world is not going to slow down for you. And you're going to look back when you're 80, 90 years old and just say, I should have, could have, would have, to all the things you wish you could have done when you were younger.
Yeah, for sure. And I used to work for a charity, the National Autistic Society in Scotland. And I think sometimes, and I'm not being critical, but I think sometimes parents can kind of maybe be too protective of their children. And I'm generally, I know that's the case, but also I think when they get that diagnosis, they maybe suppress their child stepping outside their comfort zone. And I know sometimes that can be really difficult for somebody who's neurodivergent. But like my because I didn't know about my daughter or any of my children for that matter being neurodiverse, I just treated them like, I hate using the word normal, but I just let them experience all sorts of things without worrying about it. So I think that's given them confidence, which will help them deal with challenges that they have as a result of their neurodivergence.
I mean, people need to realize no matter how we look at life, we may see things differently, we may do things differently, but we're no different than any other person. It's just the way our minds
That's it.
think.
You're still human beings, aren't you? And we bring different things to the party. You know, if we were all the same, it would be really boring. And you know, there's lots of neurodiverse people who've done amazing things, invented amazing things, and built incredible businesses. So the world would be a very different place without those people.
Now, what was it like being a co-author to a number one bestseller?
I still don't really believe it. It's incredible. I mean, we all on the 11th when it was launched, a good number of us got together. I think there was about 20 of the authors. And it was the first time that we'd met. Some of us had met online. And it was just such an amazing experience to be there together. And then to hear that we were number one was incredible. And I mean, it is such a powerful book, not just in terms of the stories, which are inspirational and will help lots of people, but also the information that Mandy's provided and the strategies that she's described that you can use to make life easier for yourself. So yeah, it's amazing.
Now, what does it feel like to have people from all over the world reading your story and relating to it?
That's pretty incredible, isn't it? It's, I mean, I haven't even thought about that side of things, the fact that, yeah, it, you know, it's not just going to be in the UK. I suppose we've got used to the fact that we can connect with people all over the world. So we kind of take that for granted. But the fact that people will be reading my little story and taking inspiration from it. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's a legacy for sure.
Now, what did your children feel about you sharing the story?
Oh, they're just super proud of me. I read my story to them and they were like, "Mum, that's amazing." Because I think that they don't appreciate that I'm actually quite good at writing stuff, because I've obviously helped them with their homework over the years, and they've thought that, "Oh, you actually know some quite good words, Mum." But no,
No.
they're really proud of me, really pleased for me, which is lovely.
All right, now you are all about art and how art can help heal. Let's talk a little about that. How do you go about using art to help people heal through things?
It's been periods in my life where I've found art very healing. So, for instance, unbeknownst to me, when I was going through the perimenopause 10 years ago, I was involved in a public art project, but I didn't know that I was at that point that I was good at art, and I thought it was all kind of I don't know. I hadn't realized that I was an artist at heart. But when I was in working on the statue that I was painting, it was just, I felt, well, it just felt right. And it just felt so relaxed. And, you know, all of the craziness and the busyness of life, I just completely zoned out from that. So I know it did help me, but as I say, I didn't know at that point that the struggles that I was having physically, emotionally, and mentally were a result of the perimenopause. I did find, you know, that experience really cathartic. And then I really like baking, and that's creative. So that's something that I've always enjoyed doing as well. But when I'm in my art studio or my art shed right now, and whenever I come out here and I'm creating, it's just, even if I'm having a stressful day or, you know, dealing with issues with the kids who still live at home, it doesn't matter because I'm just in the zone. Yeah, it's, I say to people that when you work with me, it's not about the quality of what you create. And anyway, art is very subjective. It's about the process. So it's about that taking time out for yourself and actually just, you know, shutting off and just getting creative, maybe getting a little bit messy. And we also use art just to explore things rather than, for instance, we express our feelings about the menopause. We don't use words to do that. We actually use colour. And that for a lot of people can be easier. And I would like in the future to work with the neurodiverse community and use art to help them as well.
I mean, I really believe art is one of the escapisms we use to get out of the mundane world, get ourselves into a whole other mindset of to where we don't have to think about the world around us. Just focus on the blank canvas and put our emotions into it. And what people don't realize is when you blanket out the world and you focus on one thing and you put all your heart and your soul into it, you can turn out something very beautiful.
Definitely. Yeah, because art's been used for decades to help people who've been through difficult situations to express emotions. It's used with children who've been in abusive relationships, and they don't have the words to express how they're feeling or what happened, but they can use art to do that. But then equally, you can use it to express happy feelings as well. It's very powerful, and I encourage the menopausal women that I work with to do something creative. Yes, I'd like them to come and work with me, but it could be that they decide to join a choir and sing, or they might take a dance class, or they might take up baking. All of these things are creative. It doesn't, you don't have to be using paint to be creative, but you still feel the same benefits.
Now, do you see a lot of success from the women and who have joined you and taken art?
Yeah, I mean, I've had some amazing feedback from the ladies I've worked with, and some have gone on to carry on being creative and creating art. And yeah, that would be, that is my, I would like women to do that, but if they don't, that's fine, provided they enjoyed the experience with me. It may be that they decide to go on and do something else that's creative.
Right. Now, what advice do you have for mothers raising children on their own who may be neurodiverse?
Well, the children are neurodiverse. What I would say, and this is what I say to when I'm to the women that I work with regarding the menopause, is I would say empower yourself with information. Find out as much as you can so that you can understand your child and adopt necessary strategies or effective strategies. Because when I found out about Natasha and in my research, it just all kind of fell into place. And I would also say to parents that don't expect to be perfect. You won't know everything. You're going to make mistakes, but that's okay. We're human beings. All parents make mistakes. And take time out for you as well so that you can get a break and recharge your batteries.
And finally, where can people find out more about you and read your wonderful story?
Thank you. So, I have a website which is www.andreaclaireart.uk. And I'm also on Facebook as Andrea Clare or Andrea Clare Art. So people are very welcome to connect with me and drop me an email or drop me a DM. And I am very happy to talk about all the things that I'm involved with, including the book.
And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Reed Miles. That was Andrea Clare. I'll see you in the next one. Thank you, Andrea.
Thanks so much, Reed. Lovely to meet you.
Same here.